In other words, he created partial damage of the integrated circuit. It tested good today. You installed it, the equipment. You flew the airplane, and all of a sudden, a month later, it goes into a failure mode because the error you created finally started taking effect. It's called latent damage. Electrostatic discharge can do that. And therefore, all of the equipment should be in ESD-protected bags. Everybody touching the equipment should have ground straps on. They should be doing it in ESD-protected area and so on. Okay, along comes the officials of the company into the antenna laboratory, and they see people testing passive metallic antennas. No active electronics anywhere on board. And the people said, where is the ESD ground? To which the antenna engineer said, I don't need one. There's no electronics here. It's just a simple piece of copper with a particular shape that's called antenna. To which the official said, no, you've got to have a ground. Well, this went on day after day, and finally what the guys did is they went out and got a very large flower pot and filled it up with dirt and ran a piece of 6-gauge wire from the dirt in the flower pot over to the antenna that was in the anechoic chamber being tested. And they put a sign across the flower pot saying, good earth ground. The next time the officials came into the room, they said, where's the ground? They pointed to that flower pot. Everybody was happy. Ain't that crazy? You can see the word ground has got some really funny meanings. And was that really doing any kind of grounding of technique number 1, 2, or 3? Of course not. But it made everyone happy. There was a ground installed. Okay. Good luck with those research, John. Les was the next person who signed in. W2KUZ. I hope we haven't put you to sleep, Les. K2RIW. My name is Dick. Go right ahead with your question.
Thank you, Dick. This is Les. And the call is William 2, radium, uranium, zirconium, W2RUZ. And this is the only radioactive ham station here in Flushing, New York. What I wanted to say about the people in Bayville, that probably every family in that town has a lethal machine in their kitchen called a radar oven. And the reason that the people are not being injured by that is because of engineered shielding and cutoff switches. Enough of that subject for a while. What I wanted to say was that modern day computers are now being issued without any bootable disk, which means that if you lose your information, you have to do various things to get it back into your system. But unfortunately, I have lost my system with an Acer Windows Vista computer, and I need to reformat my hard drive. I can't reformat it because I lost the password to the computer, and so I'm lost as far as that particular function is concerned. But if I can find a way to reboot or reformat the hard drive and partition it into the two sections that are required, I will be able to reload all my restorable disks with the program and get it back to normal. I was wondering if anybody out there has any short or positive means by which you can reformat a hard drive. I'm unable to do it any other way. Back to net control.
John, I'm sorry to say you made two errors on that last transmission. Number one, the audio of your particular rig is so extremely loud that your audio is heavily distorted. Some people will have trouble understanding what you said. You're banging up against the sides of this machine and making square waves. Number two, when I passed it over to you, you didn't wait for the beep and you came very close to timing the machine out. Now, I know you are trying to ask a question about a computer disk. Can you try to speak very softly and repeat your question? Wait for the beep and look at your watch. 3 minutes and a quarter, give a drop. Back to you, John.
Yeah, the handle is Les, yes. I had the amplifier on this microphone, and my question is, since I have a computer in which I do not have a bootable disk, I would need some information on how I can format the hard drive and I was wondering if anyone out there has information on how to reformat a hard drive, either by some extra disk inserted into the machine or some other nefarious methods. I need it because I cannot load the information in there until the disk is reformatted back to net control.
Wesley said he can help you. Go right ahead, Wesley.
No, I just said that I heard what he said, and to explain. But what you could do is actually, if you have this computer, the manufacturer made it with the ability to restore the computer to the factory setting, what you could do is try to press the control panel, when you switch on the computer, try to press the control panel button and try to put the F11. Now, depends from which manufacturer it is. Some guys just played with it like the child. You keep control and you press F1, F2, and 3, and so on. Now, in one of the positions, actually, you're going to get to BIOS. Anyhow, when you do that, control and F11, you should be able, when the computer just starting, instead of getting to the BIOS, getting to the portion of that window that is responsible to rebooting to the factory setting without the password of the administrator. Back to you, Dick, and to Jen.
I'm wondering, I never heard a beep. Les, I wonder if you've got some further questions on what you just heard. W2RUZ, make sure you speak soft enough. When you turned off that amplifier, it helped. Speak soft enough. Wait for the beep. You got it, Les.
Okay, thank you, Dick. Well, thank you, Wesley, for the information. I'll try that particular system, and we'll let you know next week how it works out. The other comment that I had about radiation was that practically every family out there in Bayville has a lethal machine in their kitchen in the form of a cook oven. And the reason that no one has been injured by these lethal machines is because of very careful shielding and cutoff switches that turn off the machine when you close the doors. As soon as you open the door, radiation stops. But that's all I wanted to mention about that. Now, going back to 1946 or 1947, when I worked at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, we had people who were cooked by radar by working on the antennas up on top of the mast where the radiation came out, and the people down below had turned on the radar. And it was after these fatal accidents that they start to observe precautions with the use of radar. Back to net control.
Comment?
A person who said comment, it's going to be a little while before we get back to you. I got a lot of things to say about this one. You're saying it was lethal. Are you saying that someone on top of that mast at the Brooklyn Navy Yard died because of the radar being turned on and the person not being aware of it? That's what the wording you just said, Les, seemed to say that. Give me a repeat on that. Are you sure that the person became a fatality because he was on the mast, sensed nothing going on while the radar was running but not rotating, and the person on the mast was injured by that radar in 1947 in the Brooklyn Navy Yard? Is there real documentation of that, Les? W2RUZ. K2LIW in the TechNet.
K2LIW and the net from W2RUZ. Yes, that's a Roger, but I don't have any documentation on that anymore. But I know that we had problems involving problems with radar antennas, because I worked in a radar repair shop, and whenever we had the 3 or 10 centimeter radar antenna on the floor, floor. We had to make sure that it was pointed away from human beings whenever we were working on the radar itself while it was radiating. But that was a particular factor that we ran into by story, but I don't know the factual truth of it. But it was back in that time when Raytheon had introduced the introduction of a radar cook stove, and they demonstrated its performance by placing popcorn inside the cook stove and watching it cook. Back to you, back to Matt.
Yes, I'm familiar with the fact that Percy, and I can't think of Percy's last name, was the man at Raytheon who supposedly had a chocolate bar that in his pocket started melting when he was standing near an operating magnetron tube in the laboratory at the Raytheon Company in Massachusetts. And that was the birth of the thing that became radar range, which eventually became the thing called microwave oven. Let me drop. Now, the people in Bayville are quite sincere in that they're convinced they are protecting their children from RF radiation. The majority of the people in Bayville will not use a microwave oven. The majority of people in Bayville will not use their cell phones in the vicinity of the children. The few people that are using cell phones still and have to do it to operate their business walk outside of the house in order to turn on their cell phone in order to conduct their business. They don't do it in the house where the children are located. I have observed the fact that a significant number of the people in Bayville will not use a laptop computer with a plug-in PCMCIA card, a 802.11 communication system. They will not use that in the house when the children are located there. They believe they're protecting their children from the RF radiation, from the computer, from the cordless phone, from the microwave oven, from their cell phone. They're willing to make those sacrifices. They are that sincere, and their belief is that strong. So, yes, the microwave oven would represent a potential risk if somebody bypassed all of the safety features in it so that it doesn't operate unless the door is closed. These people are not even using a microwave oven. In most cases, they have eliminated that appliance from their home. Their belief is that strong. I have observed... Let me drop. I have observed that a few of the people in Bayville are still using a so-called cordless phone. And how they justify that one, well, it's something they've had for a large number of years, and they think it represents no change in the safety features of the house. But a modern cell phone, microwave oven, and a computer with a wireless link, they will not use them in the house when the children are present. I'm trying to convince the people in Bayville that the amount of signal they're getting from these things is almost identical to the amount of total photonic radiation that occurs from a 60-watt light bulb when it's operating across the room. And are they protecting their children from light bulbs? Of course not. The amount of so-called solar radiation you get when you lay on the beach in the summertime is almost 1,000 times greater. Let me drop.
Interesting.
And are they protecting themselves from solar radiation? Well, hopefully, at first, the people are only going out in the sun for 15 minutes the first time in the year, and they're wearing sunscreen and so on. But now these people are, they are sincere. Please don't make jokes with them. I mean, they are making a very sincere effort to protect their children. It all got kicked off a few years ago because one child in the grade school developed a cancer, and one faculty member in the school developed a cancer. And the majority of the antennas in the town that are there for fire, emergency vehicles, ambulance, and cell phones are all located on the top of the water tower, which is the tallest thing in the town. It's a very low-level town, and that water tower happens to be across the street from the school. So from that point of view, cause and effect, the cancers occurred in the school, the antennas are there, and therefore the antennas caused the cancer. It's a logical thing to conclude if you're a person of little science background. And so they have all convinced themselves that this is the truth, and they want all antennas removed from their town and put in some other town. What effect it's going to have on that other town, no one talks about that. Or sometimes they say, put them in some other place. Let me drop.
Comment.
There is no other place. There's only one small section of town that has any real altitude. That's where the water tower is. You try to place them in any other place in the town, it's going to be in somebody's backyard, and it's going to be rejected, or it's going to be a piece of swampland that's off to one edge of the town, which doesn't give proper radio coverage. And you can't put up a tower in a swampland, so to speak. There is no other place in the town. There is no other town that you can put the antennas in, because all other towns are over the hill from Bayville and would give you no coverage. It's very easy to say, put the antennas someplace else. There is no place else. And more antennas must be put in the town because there is insufficient coverage now. And lives are at risk because of that now. So, as I said, we're going to have to very slowly convince our friends in Bayville, Long Island, part of Oyster Bay Township, that the radio is their friend, it is not their enemy, it is not creating the grief that they're experiencing. It's easy to anecdotally come to that conclusion. There's a tremendous amount of good science evidence saying that that is not the correct conclusion. Now, there was someone who said comment, and then Wesley said he had a comment. The first person who said comment, who was that? Give us your call letters and your name right now. K2RIWO TechNet, please wait for the beep.
November 2, Uniform Bravo Papa, Steve, Orange County, New York.
AC2UJL, standing by.
Okay, Uniform Bravo Romeo, I think it was Steve. Go right ahead with your comment, Steve.
That was N2UBP, P as in Papa. Good evening. The gentleman with the computer problem, I have some questions about that possible solution.
Okay, why don't you give him your solution. That was Les who was asking that question. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you very much. Les, is that a Windows XP, Vista, Windows 7, or Linux machine? What operating system are you running?
Yes, it's a Windows XP Vista. Go ahead.
It's either XP or Vista. It can't be both, unless it's a dual boot machine. Back to you.
No, I'm sorry. It's a Windows Vista machine. No XP. Windows Vista it is.
Okay, and the password that you spoke about, that you lost your password, is that a password that's loaded, or that's entered to the operating system, or a password that's entered into the BIOS when you load the machine? Do you know the difference? Is it actually a Vista password?
Yes, it's a password that gets you into the BIOS. Without that password, you cannot get into BIOS. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm confused here a moment. The BIOS is the hardware. Is it a BIOS password you're missing, or a software password you're missing?
No, it's a BIOS password. Without that, I can't get into the BIOS in order to say which particular element boots first, the hard drive or the disk drive. Go ahead.
Okay, probably the best solution for that is to do a little research on the internet with a friend that still has internet access, if you don't have another computer, and find out if there is a way to reset the BIOS on the machine. It may be as simple as removing the battery, the Keep-Alive battery on the motherboard, or just shorting out two pins on the motherboard to reset the password and reset the BIOS. But you have to do a little research. You may not need to format a hard drive at all at first.
No, that's interesting. Well, I'll certainly look into that, and thank you very much for the info. This is W2RUZ passing it back to net control.
Thank you for the information, Steve. Okay, the next two people who had a comment on all of it has occurred up to now are Wesley and Mr. QJL in that order. Wesley first, go right ahead.
Okay. Well, the comment that I have had is many people do not understand, especially the people in Bellevue. that using the old type of cordless phones, 41 to 48 megahertz, is actually the best way for anybody to possess your private information, your credit card numbers, your banking account, anything possible. Because this is just FM modulation. Let me jump. And what is happening is any scanner that is bought in Radio Shack that has the coverage with these particular frequencies, or any ham radio, amateur radio that has the coverage with it, is able to pick up this signal from few miles away, even though that the base station and the handset has only 10 feet apart distance of it. Back to you, Dick, and to Eugene.
A very good point, Wesley. There is, on the older fashioned cordless phones, the ones that worked at 40 some odd megacycles, very little security. And there's multiple stories of people listening to cordless telephone conversations and picking up personal information. As Wesley said, checking your card numbers and passwords and social security numbers and so on, and license numbers. So the old-fashioned cordless phones presented very little, if any, security, and lots of people could be listening. And you'd be amazed how many people think when they're on the cordless phone that they're operating on a twisted pair between them and Ma Bell. And it's far from the truth. Okay, we have, I think it's Mr. QJL and Mr. ILP in that order. Mr. QJL, I may have your call letters incorrectly. Give me a full call and your name, and then proceed with your comments, sir. K2RIW and the TechNet, my name is Dick. Wait for the beep.
Hi, Dick. This is KC2UJL. This is Tony from Brooklyn, New York. Anyway, Dick, this thing hasn't been heated up at all. I think there's a bit of paranoia involved here. And the television media has no help whatsoever. There's been tests done already. The RF energy has concentrated, has already cured some kinds of cancer by concentrating RF energy. And these poor people living in this town, I feel sorry for them. They're very misinformed on a lot of things. And you know yourself what I'm talking about. I got friends of mine that with Local 3 that work on the antenna that sits on top of the Empire State Building. And they're in great health. What can I tell you? But the media really was no help in this situation, do you think? So years ago, before they were using microwave or whatever they're using now, they were using regular RF. As a matter of fact, the Empire State Building held two gigantic transmitters with lead lines. Okay? So, what can I tell you, Dick? I just want to get my two cents into that. There are right now studies going on with concentrating RF energy and killing some kinds of cancer on the body. KC2UJL, Dick, back to you.
Hi, thank you, Tony. And you're absolutely right. Every single thing that we use carries a certain risk. Most of us would think there is nothing safer in the world than pure, clean, cool water. Believe it or not, that is a lethal substance. A certain number of college kids die every year in the United States during a hazing procedure, because the hazing procedure is a competition as to who can consume the most number of quarts of water in a certain given period of time. And a super enthusiastic college kid who is pledging for a particular fraternity could, on occasion, consume an amount of water in a short period of time that does internal body damage. And on a couple of occasions, people have died from doing that. Should we outlaw water? Of course not. So anything can be used to extreme and create damage. but the total amount of protection that radio circuits have given us in the recent times, the last few decades, let me drop. The amount of protection we've gotten from radio circuits to dispatch fire, ambulance, police, and if you've got a cell phone and you see an accident and you get on that cell phone and you call emergency services, and the emergency services could be rolling toward that accident within 60 seconds and protecting that life. The amount of cost to benefit ratio or benefit to risk ratio you get from radio circuits is hugely in favor. Yes, we amateurs have the ability, if we're foolish enough, to build a real high power 432 megacycle transmitter, pour 1,000 watts into a corner reflector antenna, and put your head 1 foot in front of that antenna. You do that particular combination, and you're way beyond the maximum permitted exposure, you're way beyond the ANSI standards, and you could potentially do yourself some harm. But it takes two or three errors in cascade. You know, it takes a storm of errors, a comedy of errors, in order to get yourself in trouble. The majority of what we do with radio, even though it's called RF radiation, is extremely safe. Now, let me drop. And so you try to convince somebody that when they hold that innocent cell phone a quarter of an inch away from their head, that they're getting 1 million times more RF energy into their body than if they live directly next door to the cell phone base station. You try to convince a person of that who doesn't understand the inverse square law, of course it sounds crazy, and they'll come back and tell you, what the heck planet are you on? Did you come from? Where did you get that opinion from? Now, a person who takes the extreme of that could say that the cell phone is dangerous. I'm not saying that at all. In fact, the one experiment where they've actually been able to measure any effect at all of cell phone usage, where they did a double-blind test, where some people were using a cell phone that was active, some people were using a cell phone that was inactive, and they had the people doing mental mathematics calculations. The people with the active cell phone were able to do mental mathematical calculations slightly faster. You could, if you did a real serious study, come to the conclusion that maybe the local brain material alongside of that active cell phone was being heated by approximately 1/10 of a degree Fahrenheit. And when you heat brain material 1/10 of a degree Fahrenheit, it calculates slightly faster. That's the best explanation for what happened during that experiment. Let me drop. But other than that experiment, I know of no experiment that has been able to measure a biological effect from the use of a cell phone. There are people who are thinking that they've seen calculations, that they've seen epidemiological evidence that when a person gets a brain tumor, there's a slightly higher probability of getting the brain tumor on the side of the head where the cell phone is located. I'm a little skeptical of that. I'm not sure it's well-documented evidence. But if you really believe that, there's a simple solution. Use a remote earpiece or use a headset with a cell phone and operate with the cell phone held out in front of your body or on your waist, if you know what I mean. Use it not against your head if you really believe that. There's a defense mechanism. You don't have to give up the use of a cell phone, even if you believe that that is a potential risk. Okay, the next person who had a comment was Bob, W2ILP. And in fact, Bob, you're the next one up. You're not. Wesley is before you. Bob wanted to make a comment. W2ILP, go right ahead, Bob. Wait for the beep and watch your watch. K2RIW.
K2RIW and TechNet, this is W2ILP. Dick, how are you copying me on this frequency before I go ahead and talk?
You're 90% signal, 10% noise. You sound quite good. Please proceed, Bob.
Okay, this is W2ILP, and I had spent a lot of time studying or trying to find out information about the safety of RF radiation. And it is a complex subject. It's not as simple as most people think. And I'm not paranoid about it. As I am, I would like to see us be able to use RF. And as a consumer, I use it. But what I see is a lot of times you have to follow the money. A lot of money has been spent in developing cell phones and cell phone systems. And it's a considerable amount of money to let their interest is in having the public accept this and believe that it's completely safe, only for the people.
W2SC T-Mobile.
W2ILP returning, and what has happened is that this is not a new subject. In 1933, and the reason I remember it, because that's the year I was born, working on the roof in Schenectady, New York, the engineers for General Electric were trying to see how high a power transmitter they could make with vacuum tubes. And they were working at medium and HF frequencies. They weren't making at microwaves or anything like that. But a number of the people that were working there suddenly became ill. And they realized that they didn't die at the time, but they became ill. And they realized that RF had a warning effect on the human body if it was strong enough. And this warning effect is what everybody has been used in a lot of the determinations of whether RF is safe. It's called the surface absorption. But there are other possible effects, which I can't go into in detail. But I will tell you that engineering societies and engineers in other countries have recognized these effects, and I went to the group. For instance, in Australia, it's recommended that young children not use cell phones. The reason being that the skull is not completely formed until a child is about 11 years old, and it may be more vulnerable to brain damage. Another situation is that the understanding from medical people who are in the field of working with brain problems and so forth have not concluded, have not completely wiped out the possibility that certain people might be more vulnerable than others to RF. And this is not due to the thermal effects, but due to a long-range effect which would change their immunity to other problems. So we got a complex problem that's a mixture of more than one thing. I'll wait for the beep. On top of that, I was just watching a rebroadcast of something that had to do with the Pauline own desire and acceleration, which you had discussed 2 weeks ago. And I have my own ideas about what the problems are, which they're totally ignoring. They have nothing to do with the way that the engineers in Japan designed the computer that is involved with the accelerator. They have to do with the servicing of it in the field. And if you want, I'll continue with that later. If not, if you think it's out of our domain, I will not discuss it. But we're in a very heated issue right now, and I think when it comes out of it, they're going to realize that it's a problem in servicing and troubleshooting the cars rather than in the initial design. So with that, I'll pass it back to you, Dick.
Very good information, Bob. For those who are interested in knowing more about the Toyota situation, is a large series of articles that you should read that are published by an organization in Massachusetts called the Safety Research and Strategies Incorporated. I'll repeat that. If you simply Google that set of words, Safety Research and Strategies Incorporated in Rehoboth, Massachusetts. They have a whole series of articles, including the president of their organization gave direct testimony before Congress a week or so ago. You read that particular testimony, which goes on for 2.5 pages. It's a beautiful synopsis of the Toyota situation. Now back to what Bob just said. By the way, Pete, we heard you, and I'm going to go over to you next, W2SET. And that is that RF Energy, let me drop. I ran to the other room to get these reports. RF Energy has been studied for more than 60 years by the IEEE, American National Standards Institute. And the vast majority of the measurable effects are thermal effects. In other words, 99.9% of what RF energy does when it strikes a human being, if it's at the frequency range where absorption takes place, the body absorbs the RF energy, turns it into heat. Turns out that water is an extremely good dummy load at VHF frequencies, 30 to 300 megacycles. Your human body is something like 90% water, and to make a joke out of it, we make extremely good VHF dummy loads. For 60 years, they've been looking for the non-thermal effects. In other words, changes of genetics and chemistry and whatever that are not thermally caused. The vast majority of experiments showed no non-thermal effect. Occasionally, a laboratory will measure a non-thermal effect. They repeat the experiment in some other laboratory, and most of the time it doesn't repeat. But just to be on the safe side, the United Kingdom, let me drop it, both in England and in Australia, the recommendation is that you do not hand the cell phone to the 5-year-old child to say hello to grandma, because the child at a very young age is reproducing neural material at an extremely rapid rate. There is the concern, not measurable yet, but the concern that the rapid reproduction of neural material and other material in a young child could be disrupted by the RF energy coming out of the cell phone. So to be on the safe side, you do not hand the cell phone to a young child. You could, if you want to, put the headset on a young child or give them a Bluetooth earpiece, so to speak, and let them talk to grandma that way. But for the cell phone itself, you might not want to hand it directly to the child. The town of Oyster Bay, the township of Oyster Bay, has essentially no cell phones in that town. If you operate a cell phone in that town, the residents will lead you to believe that they've created greater safety and greater improvement of their property values by not allowing cell phones in the town, cell phone base stations. In reality, if you operate your cell phone in Oyster Bay town, most likely it won't work because there are very few local stations. And if it did work, you're being picked up as a rover in Connecticut or at a surrounding town. Therefore, your cell phone has to go to maximum power. Therefore, to use the cell phone in Oyster Bay town is for two reasons twice as dangerous. It's running higher power, and there's a higher probability it's not going to work reliably when you need it most. Now, let me drop. Now, I made quite a few comments about the town of Bayville and their triple attempt, 3 simultaneous lawsuits that are in progress right now, to my knowledge. Maybe one or two of them has ended, but they started 2 years ago, and a brand new one was started about a month ago. So to my knowledge, there are 3 simultaneous lawsuits being pursued in the town of Bayville to try to eliminate all radio antennas from that town. That includes the cell phones, the police, the fire, and the ambulance dispatching services. And already those services only have 85% coverage. Now, Pete, W2SET, I believe he knows people in Bayville. He may have more direct information. I personally gave a testimony before, why can't I think of her name now, Gloria, the mayor of the town. It turns out that the the town fathers are in favor of the antennas. They understand the value of them. And I gave testimony before that town, and they seem to appreciate my testimony. And I know that the mayor of the town is personally known by Pete, and as I said, he knows people in that town. He probably has some further opinions as to how these lawsuits are going and what he thinks is going to happen. So go right ahead, Pete. W2SET, make sure you wait for the beep, and watch your watch. Every minute and a half, you have to interrupt K2LIW on the TechNet.
Okay, good evening, Dick, and Q2RIW, and everybody on the TechNet W2SET with further information. It was in the Oyster Bay Leader, and this third lawsuit, which came out over the past month, not only is the town again being, the village, I should say, of Babel being sued, but also now they're suing Mayor Victoria Siegel. That's what you're trying to think of, Dick. Vicky Siegel is the mayor, and every trustee is personally being sued also. So, make a long story short, there are different opinions here. Several firefighters felt it doesn't make any difference. A couple of people said they wouldn't like living near, you know, it's just because there's no understanding of the knowledge of things. But I know two or three people that said to me, oh, well, I wouldn't want to be near that, you know, I wouldn't want my home to be near all that. But they just have no, there's no concise of information. And I know the latest lawsuit includes a physicist, a doctor that's on the team, and their homes are all adjacent to it. So I would say the feedback from the town is that most people seem to feel that it's ridiculous and nonsense. And if they really felt that, you know, another way to readdress all this is just to get the antennas off the water tower, find another place nearby, and put a tower up and put all the antennas there. You know, away from, maybe a little further from the school, and there's another part of the hill that they could go on to. So it just seems, you know, as I've been hearing, and as we all know, it's you got to be careful with this, but it's not conclusive, and I've been working with radio. Let me drop it. I've been in radio for 30 plus years as a little kid, and I just feel that this is all inconclusive information. That's my feeling about it. It's again way over the top here at Babel, and so hopefully it will be resolved, because if they remove all those antennas, I don't know what we're going to do about fire and police up here, along with the cell phone coverage. I got to bow out. I'm going to listen, but think I'll turn it back to you and listen, but I got to get inside. So interesting, and I was looking to pass this along to you anyhow tonight, Dick, and you're way ahead of me as far as what you know anyhow. K2RIW, W2SET Mogul.
A comment.
A comment. Please stand by. Pete, thank you for the update. Pete is quite familiar with the people who live in Babel. He communicates with them rather frequently. And yes, it was Victoria Siegel, the mayor of the town, that I gave testimony before about a year and a half ago. It is a result of that testimony that my seven relatives in the town will no longer talk to me. What has really happened from my point of view is there is one or two very charismatic people living in that town. And those particular individuals developed an extremely strong opinion about how dangerous radio radiation is in their mind. And those very charismatic people have successfully convinced almost everyone else in the town that they come in contact with about how dangerous this is. I've listened to that particular argument, and I'm going to repeat that argument is. Let me drop. And the argument of that charismatic person is that we used to think asbestos was safe, and we found out it wasn't. We used to think cigarette smoking was safe. We found out it wasn't. We now think radio is safe, and we're going to find out it isn't. Logical-sounding set of conclusions. But the fallacy of that is that before we studied asbestos, we didn't know how dangerous it was. Before we studied cigarette smoking, we didn't know how dangerous it was. For 60 solid years, we have been very enthusiastically studying radio and all of its effects on biological materials. And that has gone on in every single progressive country on planet Earth. The studies have gone on in Australia, in Japan, in Germany, in England, France, every country you can think of has done some form of study. In the United States alone, headed up by the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, we have done 60 consecutive years or more of study of radio effects on human beings. And it's being done in our best universities, our best institutions, our best testing laboratories, and we're continuously comparing the results with all other informed countries in the world, first world countries. So there's a tremendous amount of data about radio. It isn't a subject that isn't studied and that we're suddenly going to discover it's dangerous. I would say it's absolutely impossible. But if we discovered tomorrow that we radio amateurs, because of our exposure to ham radio and all of the years that we do it, throughout the years of our life, if we discovered that it lowered our IQ by one single point, would we give up ham radio? The majority of us would say, no, that's only statistical data. It's not going to affect me. Let me drop. And if there really is an effect there, well, I'm going to go become a QRP operator, 5-watt and less operator. I'll make sure the antennas are far away from me. There's all kinds of corrective actions, even if it could be confirmed. But even confirming that, if you took a tremendous amount of epidemiological data and compared ham radio operators to the rest of the population, and then you said that, RF energy is causing this damage, and their IQ is 1 point lower because of it. If you could confirm that, you still wouldn't know what is the cause. We amateur radio operators expose ourselves to the fumes of soldering and solder fluxes and all kinds of other chemistry and the chemistry that's used for cleaning printed circuit boards and whatever. There's a hell of a lot of things we do. We climb radio towers. We install antennas on roofs and whatever. We crawl around in attics of houses installing antennas. There's a lot of things that we expose ourselves to. And even if we found out our IQ was being lowered throughout our lifetime by 1 point because of our ham radio hobby, could you really say that the radio signal itself is doing it? I doubt it highly. And if you really believe that, maybe you've got to take up stamp collecting. But be careful. Even if you take up stamp collecting, you better be using a double layer of non-latex gloves because you don't know where those stamps have been and you're touching them. And even if you use latex gloves to protect you, some people are allergic to latex. The point is, there's a risk-benefit ratio of everything you do. You're never going to live a life with zero risk. 40,000 people per year die in automobile accidents. 90,000 people per year die because of coronary disease that would be avoided if we simply lowered the amount of sodium in our packaged foods. That's a direct quote from the American Medical Association and also in the 1 month ago issue of New England Journal of Medicine. Let me drop. 90,000 Americans per year would not die of coronary artery disease if we lowered the sodium content of our packaged foods by 1/4 teaspoon per day. Are you willing to make that investment to save 90,000 lives? If you're looking for a campaign, or you're looking for a career, or you're looking for a crusade, is a hell of a lot bigger crusade than trying to eliminate the most protective thing that we know, the most beneficial thing we know, wireless communication circuits and wireless hardware. To attack wireless hardware because you don't understand it and because it uses that magic word, radiation, it's thoroughly unjustified from my point of view. I think I've made my point. A person who just signed it who said, comment, I think it may have been Bob. Go right ahead. K2RIW on the TechNet.
This is KC2UJL there, Dick.
K2RIW.
Okay, I heard both Tony and Bob in that order. Tony first, go ahead.
Hey, Dick, this is a little funny at this point. I think the government ought to put a cap on these attorneys. They're having a field day out there with the lawsuits. And people will just go to work and pay off their homes. Rather than use this abracadabra for radiation, has to get a paycheck in order to pay their homes off. Go to war, you can pay your house off, pay your taxes. Leave the government alone. Come on. This is it's getting to be ridiculous. The government ought to put a cap and get rid of some of the attorneys. Do you know that the attorneys that sued the tobacco companies for people who received cancer from smoking cigarettes? Do you know that less than 65 or 70% of the people that got cancer ever received a penny of that money? And most of the lawsuits money was being used by the attorneys. Matter of fact, on 60 Minutes, one of the reporters was doing an interview with an attorney that was spending the money that he received from the lawsuit, and the complainant already died of lung cancer. But the government ought to put a cap on it. You're creating a society of paranoia, schizophrenics, and every other... And it kind of made me think, Dick, to be honest with you. Personally, I'll give you a good example. There's been a lot of, a lot of skip on 20 and 80 meters for the last couple of days. And from a personal point of view, Dick, you go even further than that. You know, the last couple of days, my sex life has been a lot better.
And the skip on 20 meters and the change in the sunspot cycle, that's what's doing it, Tony. I believe you. So, more sex, more sunspots. That sounds good to me. We're having some fun on that one, Tony. Bob wanted to make a comment. WQILP, make sure you wait for the beep and look at your watch, Bob. You've got it. KQILAW in the TechNet.
KQILAW
in the TechNet.
This is Bob again, and, the problem with us commenting about whether RF is safe or not, RF radiation in terms of amateur radio, but we're not biologists, we're not people in the medical profession. And there are a lot of people who have succumbed to RF radiation later in life. There's a clear of a person on the side where he might have been exposed to RF. Was the problem RF, and what level was that, and how long do it take for the brain cancer to show up? I mentioned before the time when they found that RF from a radio transmitter could heat the human body. The first thing the medical profession said, we can heat the human body, let's use it to cure the human body. And so they developed diathermy equipment that could internally heat the human body and hopefully cure or alleviate some pain. Because we know that heating is sometimes a pain-reducing way of treating certain illnesses. Now, just because we think we know about all that, we don't know about all the causes of cancer. But what they do, I look up. Anything they say about the safety of RF radiation may later be proven to be absolutely true, or it may later be proven to be untrue, simply because we don't know the causes of the cancer and we don't know the effects or long-term that may cause later in life. Some people say it not 30 years ago, in certain areas, certainly there is a cell phone 40 years.
again this week, like last week. As we get on to the later portions of the night, the propagation changes. Your signal gets weaker and weaker into the machine, and you had some very serious periods of complete dropout. I'm listening to you on the input because you're in Comac, right alongside of Huntington where I live, and I'm hearing you dead full quieting on the input. But the machine was dropping out. You completely dropped out when you mentioned the word Lou McCoy as the man who died of a brain cancer. And you also dropped out when you talked about the fact that cancer has many causes, chemical and biological and genetic, as well as the possible exposure from RF energy. And when it comes to your comments on Toyota, I want to hear them, but you're now getting into greater and greater dropouts into the machine with the particular transmitter you're using right now, so only I'm going to be able to hear you, unfortunately. I do want to hear what you've got to say. Let me drop. In the case of Toyota, I know that there's a lot more information. Toyota sounds like it's still in denial that it could possibly be an electronic problem. I have seen some significant evidence in the last week where, particularly if you go to those reports by that company that I told you is called Safety Research and Strategies Incorporated. You Google those particular words, you read those reports, particularly the report of their president before Congress, and you're going to say, wow. There are between 75 and 100 individual microprocessors in the modern automobile. There are between, there is an estimated total of 100 million lines of code in assembly language. That's not the right metric, we know that. But there's a lot of equivalent lines of code going into all those micros. We all know that every SIM computer we've ever used will occasionally hang up. And if there isn't the so-called brake to idle, or safety brakes as it's called, if that backup system is not installed so that when you touch the brake pedal, the engine is ordered into idling speed, if that backup safety mechanism is not in your modern day automobile, your life is at risk. Let me drop. I own a Toyota 1999 automobile, so does my wife. I like it. Mine has run away from me on three occasions. The problem has started since 1998. The percentage of vehicles that get the problem is a very small percentage, probably 0.01%. However, if you're not educated ahead of time that if it occurs to you, yes, you're going to do the logical thing of pressing your foot on the brake pedal. No, ahead of time, there's a high probability that will not be enough. You must know ahead of time to put it into neutral if it goes into the runaway mode. To have a vehicle where you have to train the people to protect them from their own vehicle if on a small percentage of the time it goes into a hang-up mode is not acceptable. That point is made very clear by that testimony that occurred before Congress. Now, getting back to Bob's earlier point, let me drop. Can RF energy, in the case of Lou McCoy, is that what caused his particular brain tumor? I doubt it quite highly, because a tremendous amount of research has said that the only measurable effects of RF energy on a human being is a thermal effect. We believe there might be a non-thermal effect with very young children, because the rate of mitosis, the rate at which they're building up brand new cells, particularly brand new neural cells, is a very high number, and you want to make sure you don't disturb that. By the same token, a woman in the first or second trimester of her pregnancy has to be very careful on what pharmaceuticals she takes, what drugs she takes, what food she eats, and so on, in order to make sure that nothing disturbs the normal process of that development of that child. But in the case of a human being and the thermal effect, there probably is no more protected organ